Welcome to Tilly's Trans Tuesdays. This week, we're talking about how when queer people finally get some representation that's long been denied, specifically in A League of Their Own, some cishet people, even allies, cannot process that. Welcome to Implicit Queerphobia. Hi, I'm Tilly Bridges, your host, and I'm joined by my writing partner, my best friend, my wife, our token cis representation, the shortstop to my second base woman, Susan Bridges.
Hello.
See, I know you're not super into baseball, but they're like the team in the middle of the field that work together to cover second base.
I think I'm not into baseball because I'm just really bad at it.
Well, you didn't really ever play it that much.
When I was like in, I don't know, grade school or whatever, I was bad at it.
In PE class?
Yeah.
You know, you play it for like 10 minutes a week. Come on, that's not
terrible.
You don't know.
It's really stressful. Okay. I just remember being stressed.
I'm very sorry that happened to you.
The whole time.
Yes. Our guest this week is April Kirby, who spent the last 15 years making sketch shows and performing improv across the state of North Carolina, and the last 2 years having a much better understanding of why she spent all that time figuring herself out on stage. When she's not performing, she's either thrifting, working on a fun new recipe, or creating resources for Autism Grown Up, a nonprofit focused on providing autonomy-centered learning tools for special educators and free independent living resources for autistic adults. You can catch her in Raleigh, every second Saturday with Capital City Culture Club or all over Charlotte with Now Are the Foxes. Welcome, April.
Hello.
Okay, so is it Raleigh or Raleigh?
It's Raleigh, but we can call it Raleigh in the spirit of a baseball-centered episode. I'm okay with that.
Oh, I like that. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about your thrifting, because you post so many photos of amazing thrift store finds. And I don't know how you do it, because every time I go, I can't find anything I like or anything that fits.
Oh my gosh. It's like, part of me is like, I feel like maybe just like this area is very lucky, because there's like...
Yeah, that could be. It depends a lot on what they get donated, I suppose.
Yeah, because like there's a ton of thrift stores around here, but they never seem that crowded. So maybe I just get lucky and like get all the good stuff before anyone else gets a chance. But then the other secret is that just volume and being shameless about returns. If they don't fit me, I'll just be like, whatever I see, if I see a neat pattern, I'm like, I'll go for it. And then usually that involves committing to going back and getting store credit a lot of the time. But
sure. It blows my mind though, because you post something that you look so good in, it looks like it was made for you. And then like the next day you have another one that's just as good. And I don't get it. It's not fair. A little jealous.
I wish I knew whether it was just luck or if there was something I was doing, but honestly, I'm just like reaching out and grabbing stuff I like, so I don't know.
Yeah, maybe there's just another lady out there that's exactly your size, and she just goes through clothes like water, you know, drops them up, and you're just, you've lucked out. You hit the thrift lottery is what you did.
Everyone needs a fancy rich lady with their exact body type who just can't keep an outfit for more than a
exactly
couple
right. Okay, so for you, what has been the best thing about transitioning?
I think probably just like, I don't know, it feels almost weird to say this sometimes, but I find it to be very true. It's just like knowing what it like really feels like to be like alive, if that makes sense. Like
it absolutely does.
Yeah, like if you'd asked me before I started transition, I'd say, what are you talking about? I'm alive. I'm experiencing being alive. This is what life is. And then especially once I started hormones and really they started to kick in strongly, I'm like, oh no, I didn't know what life is before this. Like,
right? It's like night and day, the difference.
Yeah. And I wasn't even like, when I started hormones, I was like, you know, like life will still probably all be all these blah things that I don't like, but like I'll get these effects that I want, and that'll probably make it a little better. But no, it did so much more than I was expecting.
Yeah, I was really surprised. I think I've mentioned before, but like the most surprising thing to me about starting hormones was all of the mental changes that came and how much more clarity I had and how much more access to my emotions and myself and everything. It was really startling.
Yeah, like when I was starting out, I was like, is this just what it's like for like most people all of the time? Like, oh my God.
Right? Like, are cis people just get this all the time? It's so not fair. It,
Yeah,
oh.
I was a little mad, but then I went back to being glad to have it. So
Yeah. Well, on the flip side of that, then, what has been one of the most difficult or worst parts about transitioning for you?
I think probably, just I guess it's something I take as the package of going through the process of like sort of recognizing my wounds and sort of letting them go through the full process of healing. But sort of I feel like another thing when I started transition was like there's so many things like that I needed that like my brain couldn't handle all those things at once. And so I personally felt the effect of like, oh, if I just get this thing enough for me, and I can live with that. And then, or if I just have like, if I'm just able to wear a dress, or just able to, be addressed by my chosen name, or things like that. And as those things do get addressed over time, it got just like smaller and smaller things that like you previously didn't bother me, then become more bothersome. And some of those things are like a lot tougher to address, and not like just a matter of deciding to change it. And I think that can be a tougher thing to reconcile with, that there are some limitations, but that I'll still have certain feelings about them. That can be a tough thing to reconcile sometimes.
Yeah, I think so. And I think you're right about that, how like at the start you think, well, I just need, X or Y and I'll be pretty good. But then you get those and you're like, wait a minute, now these other things, they're bothering me and I didn't even realize that ahead of time because you're more focused on the big things that are wrong and once those start changing or getting a little bit better, you're like, wait, all these little things are wrong too, and it can feel a little overwhelming. So I think that's a really good point. And my advice to folks out there, if you're feeling that way, would be, you want to get these things changed, but it can be really overwhelming and you can't do it all at once. And it's okay to take them one or two at a time, and concentrate on those and get those out of the way and then work on the next ones. I even made a list of the things that I needed to do or wanted to change or fix. And I put the most important stuff at the top and the stuff that was least important but still bothered me down at the bottom so I could work through it and get rid of the stuff that bothered me the most first, So,
That's a really
yeah.
good strategy. I'm more like a dog that just like chases after the first thing she sees. But that it's fun in its own way, but can also be a bit confusing at times.
Yeah. Okay. Well, to our cisgender heterosexual listeners out there, it is important for you to hear this and understand what's going on. Sharing is encouraged because this is largely about you and the way you react to things about people who are not you. Also, in this episode, I'm using queer phobia instead of transphobia because the specific example I'm going to be talking about affects all LGBTQIA2S plus people, though it absolutely applies specifically to us trans folks too with implicit transphobia. Queer representation in television is something that's long been rarer than unicorns, especially good representation that doesn't fall into stereotypes or outright hateful tropes. If I have to see one more show where trans women are victims or jokes or predators, I'm gonna pop a gasket. See the Trans Tuesday on Trans Rep in Media 2022 for exactly how awful it can be when you're a trans person looking to see yourself in the media you experience. That was episode 3 of this show. And of course, see the 3-part Trans Rep in Media 2023 for further evidence of where things are presently at with trans representation and the kinds of things we're facing, which were episodes 52 to 54 of this show. But all too often, when we finally do get great, much-needed representation, a whole lot of cisgender, heterosexual people don't get it. They think it's, quote, bad, or, quote, confusing, or, quote, makes them feel icky, or fart noises. But queer stories don't look like cishet stories, nor should they. And the reason some cishet people get the willies from our stories is a little something called implicit queer phobia. I'm talking about how all of us have it ingrained into us in spite of our wishes or knowledge, simply by being raised and existing within a system that is set up to be queer phobic. And here's a great example for you that I believe I've used in other Trans Tuesdays. picture an airline pilot in your mind. What's the first thing that comes to mind? Was it a non-disabled, cisgender, heterosexual white man? Likely it was. Even if you detest bigotry and do your best to promote equality and be an ally, that probably still happened, especially if you're a cishet white person. Why? Because our society has taught you that's what pilots look like, even though we consciously know they can be women, or trans, or black, or Mexican, or disabled, or gay, or bi. Even if you believe to your core all those people can be pilots and should be if they want to be. Those are implicit biases. We have a whole host of them that seep into our subconscious minds without our permission, and we have to work to stop them and change our way of thinking. Implicit racism, sexism, ableism, and more are all very real. Implicit biases are something we all have. When those implicit biases are about our own identities or the marginalizations we experience, they become internalized. See the Trans Tuesday on internalized transphobia because these topics are absolutely related. That was episode 18 of this here podcast. So April, I wanted to ask you, have you struggled a lot with internalized transphobia or noticed other implicit biases that society wormed into you? Because like the airline pilot example I used blew my mind when I realized I was never mentally imagining them as a trans person.
Yeah, it's very interesting to think about that. And I think one of the things that I will always pull out as an example of my own internalized transphobia, especially in the context of how it prevented me from transitioning as early as I might have liked to, is I always, like, I even from an age where I don't even necessarily remember specifically, like, thinking about the concept of transitioning, but I always had this implicit fear that even, you know, when I was like invited and welcomed, that I was like invading women's spaces. And that was always like something that I had just such a deep fear that I was like intrinsically doing. And again, like just in any context, even ones where it's very obvious that I was welcome and no one was making me feel that way. And that was something that I also used to sort of deny myself transition for a long time. The more I started thinking about that as something, you know, whether that was something I wanted to do. And a lot of it, I mean, it's just, it is an outwardly transphobic talking point, but it's something, you know, even I as a trans person who would have been much happier letting go of that, it would have been directly beneficial to me. It was something that I let control my own decisions for a long time.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, our society is very invested in promoting that idea that trans women are invading women's spaces and don't belong there. When most, you know, cis women will tell you that's fine. It doesn't bother them because we're women. It's just the, you know, like 25% of people who are TERFs and transphobes that have an issue with it. So it's, I mean,
I feel like a lot of transphobes don't realize that all they're doing is spouting garden variety sexism dressed up under a transphobia label.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's like they've decided, well, this is how a man should look and behave and dress and act, and the same for a woman. And so also, like, if a person wants to transition in and become a trans woman, that's automatically suspect because women are inferior in our society. So the only reason you would want to become a woman is because there's something wrong with you, because no one wants to be a woman. And I feel like there's just a lot of suspicion around that simply because we've been taught our whole lives that women are inferior.
Well, yeah. And I think you're right that it is, it's all based on the regular garden variety sexism, as you said, because like, you will see the TERFs and transphobes. It's like the whole thing with like limiting trans women in chess and pool and others, even sports, because they're saying that if they see trans women as men and that therefore we have an unfair advantage in whatever the thing is, you're inherently saying that women are less than men at those things. And that's really sexist, you know, by design. And I think they don't even realize.
You know, it's just so dumb because it's like, oh, you care about women's sports now, do you? You definitely never did before.
Right, right.
And it's like, if you go even to the Olympics has allowed trans people since like 2008.
Yeah.
So if trans women are going to take over athletics, then they could have already.
It would have happened. And
why haven't they done it? Because it's stupid.
Yeah, like one trans woman, I believe, has an Olympic medal and it was part of a team. I think it was a soccer team. It's, so it wasn't even, Yeah.
So all these gotchas they think they have, it's just complete ignorance and fear.
Yeah.
And it's just...
But there's a lot of it.
How many ways can I say this is dumb?
For the folks listening, if you listen to that internalized transphobia episode, there's a whole host of things that society wants you to think that are transphobic. And a lot of them can keep us from transitioning for a really, really long time. And I'm really sorry that happened to you, April. And you know what? I think it probably happened to me, too, because there were times in the past when, you know, I still hadn't officially accepted my trans or that I was trans. But I'd be like, well, gee, if I could look like that cis lady, I'd do it in a second. Still cis, though. But, you know, that's internalized transphobia telling you that you have to look a certain way or you can't be a woman or you're not a woman. And that's, yeah, it's
And the garbage. Thing is, like, most cis women also struggle with this. Like, it's the same thing.
Yeah, absolutely. How long did that take you to sort of overcome, April? Were you able to get around it okay? Or is it something you still struggle with?
You know, I think, like, the breakthrough I had with that was what really made me think, yes, like, you know, feeling very strong in my conviction that I am trans and that I need to transition. And it was, and I also think, you know, I was just, like, in a mental place where I was ready to try something, you know, anything other than what I've been doing.
Yeah.
My whole life. But I remember seeing it's kind of like that. It's very similar to the real life comics storyline, but it was like a slightly different tweet that I read. But it was basically along the lines of, if the idea of transitioning interests you and you just don't think you qualify or something like that, you should try wearing a skirt and see how that feels. And I was like, oh, huh. And I literally, like, I went out to my car and I, like, literally just, like, said the words out loud to myself for the first time. I'm a woman, I'm trans.
Yeah.
And then, like, 2 hours later, I was just like crying and sobbing and driving around and all the good stuff that comes with a big realization like that or a big affirmation like that. Yeah, it's weird. It's interesting because when you really look at it, it is so silly. But
yeah,
like, it's something that I tried with it. It's so prevalent in society. It's something I tried with every fiber of my being to resist until I finally could not anymore. And that's partially maybe my fear of the consequences of accepting that about myself, but it is also partially, you know, what I had to accept about myself in the context of the ways society taught me that I was just, like, gross and that I internalized. And that's
yeah,
not true.
Well, I'm glad that you were able to get past it. It's hard. I mean, you know, I still work with stuff. We all still have these implicit things that we find. We're like, whoa, why is this happening? I gotta get, you know, it shouldn't be this way. When I picture an airline pilot, they should be able to be trans. You know, I could picture a trans man or woman or a non-binary person as a pilot. That's fine. That needs to start happening by default. You know, I can do that. But you have to consciously work at it. So, yeah. But let's talk more about these implicit biases. Okay, so A League of Their Own was a show on Amazon Prime and told a fictionalized version of the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League that existed from the 1940s to the 1950s. There was, of course, the movie of the same name released in 1992, but the big difference is the show came out 30 years later and queer acceptance is somewhat better, though really rough on the trans end. So the new series tackled things the movie barely touched on or outright avoided or wasn't able to address. Very specifically, it deals with queerness and racism. A lot of the characters are gay or bi. There's an actual trans character who faces a scene where a loved one calls him a, quote, freak. That wounded my heart, but as part of the story, it made sense and worked in the big picture. As the show was coming out, before I had even seen half of the episodes, I saw multiple cisgender heterosexual people, some who I know to be or who want to be real allies, wondering why, quote, it had to be so queer and that it was, quote, forced queerness, and that's such utter nonsense. How many intrinsically queer shows can you name? Can you get to 10? Can you even get to 5? We almost never get represented in the media, and so often when we do, it's harmful stereotypes or worse, perpetuates tropes that enable the violence we face. And that complaint completely erases the fact that this show was created by two queer people and told the story of this largely queer sports league that couldn't be told before. This is a queer story being told by us, and it causes some kind of disconnect in certain folks. Why is it bad that it's, quote, so queer? Why does it feel forced to you simply because it does not center you and is not about you? To be clear, there are still cisgender heterosexual characters in the show. Many of them. Is it about managing expectations? And if so, why do you expect things will be cishet and center you? Think about why that might be and what that says about our society, and also what that's saying about queer people. Do you only expect to see us centered in shows that shout, "This is for the queers"? And if so, why? Why do you think that is? Why can't a show for everyone also be for queer people? Are we not also part of everyone? How many shows that shout, "This is for the queers," did you watch? A League of Their Own, Queer as Folk, The L Word, Pose, Heartstopper? Do you not watch them? Why not? Some might not be for you, but how do you know if you don't try? A lesbian baseball show is 100% for me.
And, you know, it's I think that is part of it. Like, if you look at a show like Queer as Folk, you know that that show is for queer people.
Yeah.
So heteros aren't going to watch it because they know right up front, not for me.
Yeah, but why?
But this show.
That's what I want them to examine.
I know. But like, and even, you know, you mentioned Heartstopper.
Yeah.
You know it's about two, you know, gay kids.
Well, more than two. There's a lovely trans girl in there that we've talked about.
Yes, yes. But then you go to A League of Their Own.
Yes.
Which was totally hetero in the past. So
in like, movie version.
So yeah. Why did it surprise you so much? Like, oh no.
Yeah.
There's gays here.
Yeah.
I didn't know this was a gay show. Like,
yeah.
There can only be gay shows and not just
shows that gay people are in. Yeah.
People in them.
Yeah. Does it make you uncomfortable when something largely ignores you? Do you understand how queer people feel for 99% of all shows? Why is it okay for us to feel that way, but not you? Do you see the danger in implying we should only exist siloed off in explicitly queer stories? We deserve to see ourselves in sci-fi and horror and fantasy and relationship drama and family drama and kids' entertainment and everything else. Okay, April, I know you also love A League of Their Own, so I was wondering if you could talk a little about what it meant to you and why you connected with it so much.
Yeah, and actually, you know, I was excited to rewatch it for just to go on and talk about it today.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't have to, but I was just excited to. And really rewatching it, especially I watched like the last half of the season sort of all in a row. And it was just, I guess the way I might frame it is like the way I end up watching a lot of media. And part of this might be a product of just like doing lots of improv shows and playing with tropes and stuff. But just like, I sort of like watch a lot of shows, I don't necessarily feel super connected to the characters, and I sort of just think about it in terms of like, oh, this is like a cool decision they made, or I wonder why they did that and things like that. And you know, it's not usually like, I'm often surprised to find myself like really engrossed in like the story itself of the show, and I just
sure.
found myself that way with A League of Their Own right away. And that's part of the realization I have with that, is that it was up to that point probably one of the queerest pieces of media that I'd really consumed, and that it was because I was like seeing myself in it a little bit more. And since then I've, you know, explored a couple of other shows that sort of stirred up those same feelings, even a show like Owl House or something like that. But I think that was sort of like sort of the shocking side of it to me. But then also I just loved all those actresses that I've enjoyed in other contexts but not had that same type of connection, just like to see them in a story that I felt such a deep emotional connection to, that honestly, like when I watched the second half of it, I found myself crying a lot more than I even did on the first watch through. Yeah, it's just kind of hard to describe. It's almost part of like the transition experience of just like embracing that type of media and just seeing that story as like as something that I can really connect to on a personal level instead of just like, this is a piece of entertainment, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's so strange because it still happens so infrequently that when I see a show that I can connect with on a really personal level like that, where I'm feeling represented by the show, like someone like you could exist in this world and look what that would be like.
Mm-hmm.
It's a completely different experience, and it shouldn't be so rare, right? It should be a thing that happens all the time, and yet it doesn't, unfortunately. And it's a little weird to think that, like, you know, cishet white men get that all the time in everything they watch, and it's so rare for like everybody who's not them, even just for like cishet white women. Like Susan, how often do you feel that you see yourself represented in a show? Oh, well, you're not het, okay, but you are cis.
I mean, Yeah, I mean, even like, and I know we've talked about this before, but yeah. Like, our manager asked if we would like to be submitted for Queer as Folk, and I'm like, no, because we have no idea. We don't have that experience. Like,
that show is very much about like the club scene and
right. But a lot of people think that is all that queer people are,
right?
Which is a hard thing. And so no, you don't see people who are just extremely boring middle-aged.
Hold on now.
Extremely okay. We're not that boring.
Like, I just
really a little
boring. I read a lot of books and I love cats. Okay, that is queer. But like, you know, it's so no, I guess I don't really not that often see that kind of example because, you know, I mean, personally, like, I don't look like a movie star.
Well, I'm not. Few of us do. Nobody looks like movie stars.
Right. So
that's why they're the movie stars.
Pretty TV people.
Right.
So, I mean, yeah, not that much, yeah. I guess.
Well, one complaint that I kept hearing about A League of Their Own was that there was no, quote, story reason for the characters to be queer or for the one trans man to be trans. But how many things have you seen where there's a story reason to be cisgender or heterosexual? Is it zero? Is it zero? Of course it is. Cisgender heterosexual characters are allowed to just exist in stories and be people whose entire existence doesn't need to be justified by the story. But some queer people show up and some folks shout, why must they be there? Do you understand what that does to queer people? To hear that and think we're not allowed to exist in a story unless there's a specific reason for it, which means we should just disappear and not be in media?
And I just want to say also, this is part of all of society reinforcing the heterosexual male-female ideal.
Yeah.
That this is the gender you're supposed to be. This is how you're supposed to feel. This is who you're supposed to love. And it's in every media, I mean, everywhere.
It is. It is, absolutely.
And people don't even realize that. You're being fed this message constantly.
Yeah.
Every day.
Yeah. And never mind that the reason League of Their Own was so queer is because the players were largely queer, the real players. Have you seen pro-women athletes? This is not news. The stories being told by queer people about queer history. And even still, some cishet folks think it just shouldn't be a thing because it doesn't cater to them. One episode was even about the heteronormativity that the women players were forced into by the league. They had to wear makeup, they couldn't wear pants, and had to play in skirts. There's a whole episode about police raids on what little queer culture there was. It's very clearly queer all the way through. Okay, just how queer was it? Of the main cast or recurring characters, by my count, there were 9 queer characters. How many cishet main or recurring characters are there? 11. Queer people, a mix of all cis, trans, non-binary people, and sexualities, are not even half of the characters of one specific identity, cisgender, heterosexual. I will likely never, in my life, see a single show or movie that's even close to 50% trans people, let alone the entire cast. But nearly everything is entirely cisgender. Why? There's no such thing as a default human, other people exist. But our media doesn't often present that. For more on how there is, in fact, no default human, see the Trans Tuesday on Cis Is Not a Slur, which was episode 30 of this podcast. Can you even imagine a world where 99% of shows were entirely queer except for an occasional cishet person who was the butt of a joke or the victim of violence? Can you imagine a world where all media is like that? How would that make you feel?
That sounds like a good writing exercise.
Right?
It'd be really interesting.
Now imagine you finally get a show or two about you and your story, and you're still not even more than half the cast. And all the queer people wonder why you have to force your cishetness onto things. Have you encountered this kind of response from cishet people, April, where anything that features us in any way you hear them talk about as being forced or like it's some kind of personal attack on them for not being a queer person?
You know, that's something I think I've been fortunate in sort of since coming out, being able to mainly hang with folks who wouldn't express that kind of sentiment. So I feel lucky for that. I think you see it a lot in politics and things too, or even if there's like an explicitly queer-centric event, you know, people will look in from the outside and who maybe weren't even planning on attending or being involved with it in any way. And just knowing that it exists is enough to be like, there's too much focus.
Yeah. I feel like you also get that anytime there's like an announcement about a show or a movie or something is going to have one character is going to be some flavor of queer. And people are like, well, why do you have to shove it down our throats? Or, you know, if the gay character in a show actually kisses another gay person, they're like, why are you shoving it down our throats? They're obsessed with that.
When what they really mean is, how dare you exist?
Right. And they don't realize at all how much the reverse is true, how much being cis and being heterosexual is actually forced down everybody's throats in all of our media, children's media, everything. I mean, I talked about that just not that long ago when we were talking about Disney movies and Hallmark movies and how compulsory cisgender and compulsory heterosexual they all are. And it's just reinforced into everybody all the time. But one thing that doesn't, and they all lose their minds.
Yeah, I feel like it's a running joke, for example, like how lukewarm like Disney's representation is.
Oh,
but
yeah.
Even so, every single example of it will always get such a huge reaction.
Yep.
It's wild that there's another show, The Other Two, which had like a great gag on that type of representation where it's just like a tiny, tiny implication. And then it gets a ridiculously disproportionate amount of attention of why is this here? Why do we need it here?
Yep. Yeah.
But then you do a story like A League of Their Own where it's like central to the story. And that's also not.
Right, right. They don't want it anyway. They don't want it to be all about queer people or even have any queer people anywhere around. It's because
even though this is story is probably way more true to life than the original.
Absolutely. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, I would like to point out that there's not many queer people in shows mostly full of cishet characters. And certainly there are no shows I can think of with mainly cishet characters where queer people make up almost half the cast, let alone outnumber them. And so the result is that there are these cishet people who I like, who want to be allies, and are out there forcing queer people like me to justify a queer show's existence because they can't see the implicit biases that are so very ingrained within them. When we can't see ourselves in media, it crushes us. We feel like we don't belong and aren't wanted. See the Trans Tuesday on Bad Representation for more on that at tillystranstuesdays.com. But when we do see ourselves, it's life-changing. Dr. Mae Jemison was inspired to become an astronaut by seeing Nichelle Nichols as Uhura in Star Trek. There's an article in the show notes about that. I wrote an entire book about the trans allegories of The Matrix, which means so much to the trans community because those movies speak to us and about us in a way nothing else does. It's almost literally all we have. Those movies have changed so many lives for the better. A League of Their Own even made one of the original women's pro baseball players finally feel she could come out. She kept her truth hidden for 95 years because of the queer phobia in society. Again, there's a link in the show notes. Co-creator Abby Jacobson said, "She came out at 95. It's never too late to do that. It made me feel so proud of the show that we're telling these stories. That maybe she wouldn't have had to wait till she was 95 if more stories had been told." How much clearer can the importance of representation be? There's another article in the show notes about co-creators Will Graham and Abby Jacobson and what the show meant to them as queer people. How can you think the show was too queer? How can you find it forced when we tell our own stories? Here's a quote. Graham: "The show is really the story of a generation of women who wanted to play baseball, and a lot of those women were queer. I think queer audiences are very used to people sort of teasing them and giving them some crumbs and giving a little, and this is a show that is trying to authentically tell these stories very wholly. This show meant so much to the queer community. There's an article in the show notes about what it meant to Black queer folks. You can look at the amazing history it's brought to light. You can go learn about Black trans people in history in another link in the show notes."
And that's, yeah, that's a good point, too. Like, you don't see Black queer folk in media.
Right. It's even rarer. Like,
they exist, too.
Yeah, absolutely. See the Trans Tuesday episode on intersectionality and how for every vector of marginalization a person experiences, finding representation of their identity gets even more difficult because, like, yeah, Black trans people are even rarer than white trans people are in media. And You know, search the ALOTO and A League of Their Own and League of Their Own hashtags, still going strong over a year later, and absorb what this one show meant to so many queer people. How can you deny the importance of that kind of representation? So April, you talked a little bit about this before, about feeling more connected with the show because you felt, you know, represented by it, or like you could see yourself in it more. And how rare is it that something like that happens for you? I mean, can you think of another show that you sort of felt that with, or how often do you think it happens?
It honestly is truly rare. And in some ways, I'm sort of re-exploring that in the context of like what interests me.
Yeah.
Like post starting my transition. But I think that Will Graham quote about how getting crumbs was really appropriate, because it almost felt like, and especially watching it last night again, it almost felt overwhelming, like sort of how much of it was focused on that and like sort of maintaining that connection. Whereas like, I hesitate to even think of an example in a smaller show where I was just like, oh wow, that's like a nice like little like bite-sized thing for me or something like that.
Yeah.
But I mean, of course, like honestly, The Matrix is probably one of the better examples. And I will say that one is so powerful. It's like, it's actually, I don't think I've mentioned this like on Mastodon before, but when I was growing up, a friend of mine, we were both these big Matrix fans, and she actually transitioned like 10 years before I did. And I always saw her as like such a brave, wonderful, you know, person who was great and made that big choice, and I didn't, and I'm so bad. And then, but once I finally sort of came around and made my decision to transition, I reached out to her and I mentioned, you know, the whole Matrix thing, and she was like, oh yeah, don't you remember, you introduced me to that movie. And I was like, what? So that's always like had like a deep emotional resonance. But then also that night that my proverbial egg cracked, I tried to watch, I hadn't read the full all the Trans Tuesdays threads yet, but
yeah,
I had heard, you know, sort of out in the internet that The Matrix was a trans allegory. And so I watched it. That was the first movie I thought I should watch because I just didn't know what else to do. And
yeah,
I had a hard time getting through it because it was just so like every beat felt so powerful. Like,
yeah,
just, yeah, those, I don't think anything else I've seen so far has risen to the level of The Matrix in this show, which I think speaks a lot for this show too, especially on rewatch.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, to Will Graham, Abby Jacobson, and the writers, cast, and crew of A League of Their Own, thank you for giving us something so wonderful that means so much to so many, and for saying trans people exist in that world. I'm so sad we'll never get any more of it. I'm so sad I'll never get the chance to write for it. I get it. Implicit biases are hard to wake up from. But if you don't try, if you don't do the work to celebrate marginalized voices telling our own stories, if you wonder why our stories don't center you, even when you're still heavily featured, you're not being a true ally. In fact, if you want to make things better for us, take the initiative and hire more trans people, in this case, specifically trans writers. Staff us on your shows, include trans characters in your shows, help us get our stories told. Be an accomplice, and see episode 35 of this podcast for how to do that. Thanks for being here, April.
Thank you. It was so great to be here as well and talk about this show. It was really great to revisit it. I feel like it was a great opportunity, and I appreciate being able to do it.
Queer people deserve to see ourselves in media. Queer people need to be the ones telling our stories, and you need to be okay with them not being about you. Please help us get there. That's the only way things get better for all of us. Tilly Bridges, End Transmission. Tilly's Trans Tuesdays is hosted by Tilly Bridges and Susan Bridges, with audio editing and sound mixing by Jillian Morgan. The Google Doc and social media versions of this week's topic and all past topics are available at tillystranstuesdays.com. Special thanks to Daisy and Jane for the use of Sorry Not Sorry as our show's theme music. Please stop by and show your support at daisyandjane.bandcamp.com and soundcloud.com/daisyandjane. You can find me at Tilly Bridges on Blue Sky, Twitter, and Hive, on Mastodon at tillybridges@mastodon.social, at facebook.com/tillysbridges, and on Insta and Threads at heckyeahtillybridges. And you can find Susan on most of those at Susan L. Bridges. You can find Jillian at Audio Jillian on Blue Sky. You can join the Tillyverse Discord server by following the link at the very bottom of tillystranstuesdays.com. We hold regular watch parties for the Matrix films and other trans movies where I do a live Q&A, and it's blossomed into a wonderfully supportive, compassionate, kind community of friends. We'd love to have you join us. For more information, visit pendantaudio.com. Thanks for listening.